Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The trade deadline has come and gone. No major shakeups for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Kevin Love is still on the roster. J.R. Smith is still on the roster, and so is Tristan Thompson. To help break everything down, I have my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good. I just want to note I just saw this. I went to ESPN NBA's page, and the bottom, the ESPN Plus, teased a link on the top headlines is trade grades. Will Ennis help Sixers? Why did they pick that one?
Well, that's the sexiest headline in my opinion, personally. But we do have some sexy things to talk about. And to help break those down is one of the sexiest men in the business, Matt Moore. Matt, how's it going, man?
Oh, what a lovely introduction. How are you guys doing?
We're doing just fine. Kyle Korver got traded for 2 seconds and a first. Actually, 3 seconds and a first.
That's pretty hard to believe. I still can't get over kind of what the asset accumulation has been for the Cavs, but I guess that's one. That's one of the pluses when you have Dan Gilbert that's just willing to pay a lot of money for a crap team and willing to take on bad salaries for picks.
Do you want to just start off with a fight? Do you want to jump into a fight? We can just jump.
Yeah, yes, I'm down.
Go for it. I'm
just jump into the one. Like, why? This is exactly what they should have been doing the whole time. Why did you extend Love? I do not understand this. You could have. Why?
Does it matter?
Done the thing with Love and gotten an even better asset. And it would have been like, why I've been like, that's a good move. Like, they did everything perfect. They took on the horrible money. They got great picks. They got all of this stuff to pull together. They're going to be horrible next year. They get a great pick. Like, this is all excellent. Why the fuck did they keep Kevin Love?
Horrible next year, Matt. You're not believing in the Sexton, Jetty, RJ Barrett, Love, and Tristan Cavs. Come on.
My favorite, when the Lakers and the Celtics were going back and forth comparing the stats of Ingram and Tatum, and everybody was like, I'm just saying, if you compare them, if you look at the last 16 weeks in the second halves of games in which the moon was full, it actually turns out Ingram is actually a better player. Well, my favorite was when, I forget who it was, but somebody was like, by the way, Chetty Osman, better numbers in the last five games.
That was me.
It's always Justin. Whenever Justin jumps into a conversation with Jetty, Love, that doesn't really belong, it's Justin. I do want to actually address your frustration with the Love extension. I guess my question is, like, why did they need to move him? Like, what were they really going to, like, were they just going to get another first? Like,
I get it. I
guess I just don't care. Like, that doesn't, like, I understand the logic of where you're coming from, but like that, that wasn't my reaction. That I don't kind of harp on that for whatever reason. It's just kind of feels like a thing, you know. It's like, oh well, they just chose to have Love around for the rebuild. Like, I don't know. Like, is that so terrible?
Right, is like if Kevin had gone to them and been like, look, LeBron left, and like,
get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah, and like, I don't know this kid, but seems like he sucks. Like, we should, you know, help me out here. I guarded Curry on the key possession. Do right by me. You know, I want to go somewhere else. And maybe that would have happened. Like, and he got the bag, right? So, like, this part of it is his injury history. He got the bag, which is, like, good for him. So, I get it. I'm always in this position of, my mindset is, and like, I'm not a GM, and there's so many things that are complicated about this. And like, I learned this more and more. Like, I don't mean to be that guy, but like, I was talking to an executive last week, but I'm going to do it. I was talking to an executive last week, and he was like, what people really don't get is it's not just ownership that you have to deal with, which is a big part of it. You have to answer to that person. Like, that person pays you and keeps you employed. And if they say, I want to do this, you have to do it. That's the guideline you work under. But he's also like, it's bigger than that. It's like the guys, you know, if a guy is going to be having a kid, you don't want the mother to have to be traveling when she's 8 months pregnant. If it's, you know, like, he's really made a lot of friends in town and has become somebody that's like really loved by the community, that has an impact. Like, there's all of these things. But at the same time, usually like the cold, hard decisions have to be made at some point. And so I always think, like, if I'm in that position and you're like, all right, we have to start over from scratch, the number one thing I'm doing is I want to get the most value from my stars right now. I think maybe what I have factored in with this whole thing was, to me, Kevin Love on a long-term contract is worse. Because for me, I'm like, I want to be able to get him, to see how he looks, to see how it fits. And if it's not a good fit, I'm okay. Like, I gave up the assets, but I want to be able to move on or get another deal done. Maybe if he's lost a little bit of value because he didn't fit great with us, I can give him back at a discount rather than, okay, if I'm going to get Kevin Love, I know I've got him for X number of years. Like, that's harder for me,
right,
if I'm making a decision to acquire him. So, like, that's my thought process. But, like, this is all, like, in the past. And we really should focus on the fact that, like, you guys had a killer week. Like,
yeah, it's been really interesting. Just for the sake of wrapping it up, the Cavs, since the beginning of the season, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, have added 2 first rounders and I believe 7 second rounders since
six.
They actually they were at 6 heading into the Rockets trade, and we thought they had lost one because Haynes reported as much, but they actually added one. I believe it's 7, but yeah. Either way, 6 or 7. Second rounders in exchange for Rodney Hood, George Hill, Kyle Korver, and Sam Decker. It's obviously a great haul. And I think the first thing we kind of have to talk about is like how important getting that second first rounder this year is, especially given the fact that they aren't going to have a second rounder. You know, this team otherwise would kind of look almost exactly the same, but with one player added, and that didn't sound very palatable to me.
No, that would be a really tough look. And obviously, like, getting that second first rounder is really nice. I'd love to see maybe if, like, Trey Jones is available. The Cavs really could use a point guard, so maybe go after him. Before we move off the Love, I just want to add one thing. I do think part of the rationale behind extending him is you got Dan Gilbert, who's investing a ton of money into the stadium renovations. Season ticket prices aren't going down, even though the team isn't as good. He's trying to make it the MSG of the Midwest. And I just think that the anticipation of going into the season was that they were going to flip the veterans, keep Love, and then they're hoping for a quick turnaround. And my goal with this team is to be like a 6th seed that's somewhat enjoyable. And I think keeping Kevin Love is the quickest path back to that. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're going to have to flip him and kind of eat the bullet there.
Yeah, I guess, Matt, my question to you is, in what ways is having Kevin Love on the team hurting the Cavs?
I guess it's a fair argument because they were horrible. My thing is, like, I thought he would make them too good.
I just don't think he's that type of player. Like, my go-to this offseason was Marc Gasol played 73 games last season.
If you really want to get to it, it's really, like, it's really honestly is just, I want to see Kevin Love go somewhere else and win. Like, I just I want to see Kevin. To be honest, I'm the same way with Jrue Holiday. Like, Pelicans fans are like, we're not trading Jrue. Screw you. Like, no, like, we love Jrue. And I'm like, I don't care. Like,
yeah.
Go, like, if you love something, set it free. If it comes back to you, it's probably broken. Like, right. No. Like,
and I think both of us are in that boat. I mean, we've had no real problem or no real ill will towards the most recent stars that have wanted to leave and have gone elsewhere. I think we can kind of understand that motivation. But for as long as Kevin Love wants to be here, I'm okay with him being here. The moment he wants out, I'm okay with that. Even if it means that you get slightly less of a return, I think he's kind of earned the right to choose whatever he wants to do with this team.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
And, like, you know, the thing that we always talk about on this podcast is my most quoted David Zavac tweet, which is the Cavs eventually are going to have to build some sort of positive identity that doesn't directly involve LeBron James. And, you know, maybe there is some carryover from these championship teams. They do have a few guys who played on those teams on winning Cavs teams.
Well, that was why I thought you. That was why I thought you guys would be decent this year. I took the over and took you very high in my rankings.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think they were going to be good. I mean, no one thought they were going to be this bad, but no one thought Kevin Love was going to play 4 games.
Yeah,
also, you know, like,
that's a fair.
It's so hard to evaluate.
Also, I can't. To be honest with you, I can't figure out George Hill. I just can't figure out his entire existence. And, like, I know
he's a weird, weird player.
I think he's just not able to get healthy because George Hill, like, when he was really good, was a hell of a player.
Yeah.
And that was just something that, like, it took me a while to figure out that he's just not that guy anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing is, like, I just have to accept that he maybe his expiration date came earlier than some guys. That I was like, well, he's not that old. Like, he should still be within the range of being, like, pretty decent. And, even Milwaukee, he's got a negative, point differential. Like, y'all made out like bandits in that deal. That was a really good deal for both sides. That was where I was like, hey, look at Cleveland, like, making a smart move there, like, getting off of the money early. And, like, the Korver deal was, like, really good. And the only thing I'll say with the seconds, we're a little – I think the whole basketball Twitter intelligentsia thing, we're a little crazy about the second rounders.
Oh, 100%. They don't have a ton of value, but what I think they are going to help with is, like, every contract that they took on. So Brandon Knight, Henson, Delly, they're all expirings next year. And I think that they're going to try to flip those expiring contracts, and maybe you pair some of those second round picks to get another bad contract and another asset in. Like, I think that that's going to be kind of the cycle. So I think seconds help you get those deals done. But in general, they're not too valuable, and the Cavs have a tough enough time drafting with their first round picks.
Their first pick of the second round
has been better than their last two first overall picks, so that's worked out okay.
That's fair. But the difference for the Cavs, just to make a quick note about adding all these seconds, it doesn't really matter that much, but they're currently on pace. They owe their 2019 second, they owe their 2020. If their first that they owe to Utah doesn't convey, it turns into 2021 and 2022 seconds. Like, they weren't going to have a second round pick till 2023 heading into the season. So even though that it doesn't matter much, it does help grease the wheels a little bit.
I just think it's impressive that you basically took all of Utah's players and then flipped them. Like, you really did.
That's weird.
It was a total flip house project. Like Utah didn't even get that much back. Like, Utah basically has the same roster they had to start.
Jay Crowder, right?
Like, just it's just weird to me that it's like you just took all of the Utah guys and then turned them around. And that was, like, really impressive. I want to ask you this. This is the question I think that, like, the non-Cavs fans really want to know is, what are you guys going to do if you get the number one? Like, what's going to be your reaction after how ridiculous that would be?
Oh, I'd be pretty pumped to get that.
We'll just be geek because the new odds are so depressing. Justin, I don't know if you've seen on the Chasedown Twitter account, Justin's just been doing daily mocks on Tankathon, and it's like 7, 6, 5, 6, 7.
Doing one sim a day, and it's so goddamn bleak. If we get a top three pick, or even top four, I'll be happy. Top two would be ideal. But that would certainly be quite the change, and that would be an uncomfortable situation too, because I think Zion is only able to play the four, or at least that'll be his full-time position, so then things immediately get awkward with Love. But one thing I really do want to talk to you about, Matt, is there was a big trade today. We got a Hall of Fame big man going to join a temperamental small forward, just not Anthony Davis, who is Marc Gasol to Toronto. Obviously, Memphis, Marc Gasol, those are teams and players very close to your heart. I just want to kind of get your sense on what emotions you went through today, just seeing it finally come to an end.
So basically, this is like in The Princess Bride, where he's got him on the rack, and he's like, how do you feel? Like, that's
a little bit.
Podcast, so I can describe my pain to you. That's what's happening right now.
Yeah, a little bit. It's a precursor to when we eventually trade Kevin Love. What you're suggesting for us?
I made peace with it when they lost the Pelicans without Davis by 20 a couple weeks ago. That was when the last ounce of, like, hope for me left. When everybody wanted to trade him last year, I checked in with Memphis because that was what bothered me last year. Was everybody was like. The reports came out of Boston, funnily enough. Reporters based in the Massachusetts area, funnily enough, were like, the Celtics have interest in Marc Gasol. And everybody's like, what could the Celtics trade for Marc Gasol? And it's like, nobody asked if the Grizzlies want to trade Marc Gasol. Why are we talking about this if Memphis hasn't been consulted? So I checked in with Memphis, and they were like, no, we're not trading him. It's not happening. And then it was just apparent after that Pelicans game 2 weeks ago, or a couple weeks ago, 3-4 weeks ago, I guess. But I was like, that's it. It's over. It's time to give up the ghost and take care of it. I'm relieved because if he stayed, he was just going to be really frustrated and unhappy. And like Mark in that situation, he's not toxic, but he's also not pleasant to be around. And I'm always thinking about like what it's like, because like it sucks. Like when your season goes sideways,
just everybody, don't know what that's like.
Yeah, it just sucks, right? Like everybody's just bummed. You know, like the good news, like at least with the Cavs, they have a lot of young guys who are just like, we get to play.
Not a lot of weeing going on. But, Cleveland, but sure. But
yeah, I think you know, when I watch Sexton, as rough as he is, like I don't know, like he wants to play. Like he wants to be out there, and I think that matters. And so like I didn't want Mark to be there unhappy, wilting through another season.
Do you think they kind of went out of their way to send Mark somewhere pleasant?
Yeah.
Do you think that this was a favor to him? Because it feels like one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they had to split a bunch of things here. They had to do like a whole. They had to hit between a whole bunch of corridors in order to find the right trade. Which is like you have to find a team that will take on the money first off, because a lot of teams are just like nope. A team that needs a player like him, because a lot of teams are like, no, we're good. A team that's they need an impact player now. A team where he can go to where he's not like that. That was the thing, is when people were like, every time that Suns fans are like, well, we could put together this. It's like, no, like most guys are not going to trade their guy to Phoenix because that agent will remember it forever. Right. Like they will remember that you traded their guy to Phoenix in their prime forever. Mm-hmm. So like those teams were out. Charlotte made some sense because I was like, all right, you can play with Kemba. He would probably not be like super jazzed, but like Mark wants to win. He's always wanted to win. And so I was happy to see that he got to go somewhere. I was fine with the return because like I had very little expectations. A year ago, sure, I would have been like, no, like we need like a young prospect and two first back. But at this point in his career, I'm like, no, this is good value. Like a young young in his career, but not young in his age, point guard in DeLon Wright, who I like very much and has a really well-rounded skill set.
Yeah.
Valanciunas, who I think has played really well. I actually have an article up on Action Network. That's the sad part about this is like, I don't know if the Raptors upgraded.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because obviously Gasol fell off a cliff after a good first couple weeks to the season. I guess my thing is, I know Ibaka's playing really well. I just always feel like he's going to turn back into a pumpkin at the worst time. And especially offensively, like whenever I just feel like there's always the roadmap. And I think Justin and I, more than anyone, know what it's like to have your team attack the Raptors on either end of the ball. And it always felt like the best outcome was get Ibaka to catch the ball in the short roll. And have force him to make a decision.
Yeah.
And that was just always there. Like, cause they always had, he was always going to be the release valve and he was always going to do either the wrong thing or do the right thing too slowly. And it just, you know, I've seen some people say, oh, well, his gravity is more of a role man and as a mid range threat is a little bit more, has more utility offensively than Gasol. And I just feel like maybe in the regular season, but it does feel to me like Gasol's brains are going to matter a lot in the postseason, even if the fit is imperfect and he's not the player he used to be.
Yeah, and his toughness. Part of my thing is like, I actually sat down today. I went back through because what you saw today in the Eastern Conference was essentially you saw a miniature arms race that was built around matchups. So Milwaukee said, like when we saw them get blown out earlier in the season by Boston, a lot of us were like, okay, look, Milwaukee's going to win a lot of games, but they're not going to be able to do anything if they can't solve this problem. They can't go small, and they can't go small. The Celtics are going to tear them to pieces, or the Raptors are going to tear them to pieces with Siakam or Ibaka at the five. So they don't have a counter. They're screwed. Because most teams are just like, if they're winning, you're like, no, we're good. Like, we're winning. Why would we change anything? Like, that's what Denver did. Denver's like, we have the second-best record in the Western Conference. We're not changing anything. But Milwaukee, to their credit, not only did Budenholzer make tactical adjustments as the season went on, like Budenholzer does not want to get out of what he does, but versus the Hornets, who were killing them in their big sets, they switched it up and put Giannis at the five, and then they went on some insane run twice versus the Hornets, and that was when Milwaukee kind of figured out, like, oh, like our small ball counter isn't Thon Maker, it's Giannis at the five. That's going to have to be what it is.
Yeah, Giannis looks a little bit better at the five than Thon.
Right, a little bit. And so, but to their credit, instead of trying to stretch the rotation out to get to that lineup, they got aggressive. And like they did with George Hill, they're like, we need another point guard. Let's go get George Hill. Like, to their credit, they went out and they added Mirotić, who now slides in perfectly at stretch four, so you can even more easily get to that lineup. All right, so now if you're the Toronto Raptors, and you've been working on this deal anyway because it's good value for you, but you're looking at it and you're like, wait, okay, Milwaukee just solved our small ball advantage over them, which means we're going to need to be able to combat Brook Lopez. We can't do that with Jonas Valanciunas. Let's go get Marc Gasol. Now, I went back and watched their matchups today, and it turns out that I don't know that's going to work. But Lopez spaces so far out that Mark has a hard time getting out to cover him, and he hit some threes on him in limited minutes. They split the season series 1-1.
Right.
Horford, same kind of deal. That was what I kind of noticed, was both Lopez and Horford had positive net ratings when Gasol was on the floor and negative net ratings when he was off. So these are the kind of things I look at and I go, I don't know if this is much of an advantage. But at the same time, if Nick Nurse can figure out how to integrate Gasol and you work on some DHO action with him and Lowry, or if he and Danny Green pop, or if he and Kawhi Leonard, which I think that's a weird fit, but if Leonard and Gasol just wind up running pick and roll perfectly, they're going to tear a lot of teams up. It makes them better. It gives them some more insurance, and they have the versatility to go to different options if they need to. But it's a really interesting trade on a lot of levels, given a lot of this is coming down to how much dynamicism do you have in order to match up with the various teams in the Eastern Conference.
How much does Gasol's playmaking ability help this Raptors team? Who, because that's one of my other concerns with them is Kawhi is kind of a black hole this season. And I mean, he's never been a great passer. And obviously Lowry's a good passer. Siakam's a, you know, a good passer, but you know, not a primary initiator. Like, do you think they run offense out of around Gasol often, or is he just going to be a spot up guy and anchor their base defense? I can't figure out how much they want to use him or how much he's capable of giving on that in that capacity. Yeah.
That's another thing I was concerned about. So one of the things I looked up first off when I was like, all right, how does this fit? I was like, well, how much offense do the Raptors generate off of cuts? Because if you're asking me what's the most valuable thing Marc Gasol does on the floor, it's giving the ball in the pinch post, run some actions off screen to get cutters. He'll find them. He's a phenomenal passer. He's the second best passing big man in the league behind Nikola Jokic. Mm-hmm. That's a phenomenal addition. The Raptors generate the second fewest points off of cuts in the league. And right. So you can look at that. You can look at it both ways, right? You can say, so with Gasol, that number should improve. But right. I kind of look at the other one, which is I go, that's not what they do. They don't really do that. They run pick and roll to spot up shooters, and they run isolations with Kawhi. And that, like, that's their bread and butter. That's their identity. So are you going to adjust a whole bunch in order to make use of Gasol? Are you going to make him just into a pick and pop option? Because Gasol's worse when you try and get him to shoot more. Like, it's, there are all these things in which, like, I'm very happy that Mark's going to a team where he's going to get to compete, and, you know, he's legitimately competing for a title in whatever sense that non-Warriors teams are competing for a title. Like,
right.
A theoretical title.
At the very least, a finals appearance.
Yeah.
Which is not nothing for a guy who's never been there.
Right, that's huge, right? And, like, that helps his Hall of Fame case. So, like, that's significant. But when I get into the nitty-gritty details, when I'm able to remove how much I've loved his game for so long, I do look at it, and the more I look at it, the more I get a little bit concerned. Now, one thing I try and tell people is, I learned as an analyst a long time ago, these moves are going to happen. You're going to look at the numbers and your eye test and how you know these teams function, and you're going to have a concept. And a lot of times they organically kind of develop differently just because it's chaos theory. Like, you just don't know how things are going to develop. It's just like every team is an organism. And when you introduce this new element into the DNA, you don't know what changes are going to evolve. Like, if you told me Brook Lopez joins the Bucks, I would have been like, oh, they're going to run pick and pop with him and Giannis all day long. And that's not what they do. The Bucks never run pick and pop with Giannis and Brook. They put Brook in the corner and force the center out of it. And then they run pick and roll with the guard, which is a lot harder, but it's also just not what I would have thought. So there's all these ways. So who knows what Gasol is going to do? It may be short rolls. They may operate out of the post more. It may be two-man game with Gasol and Leonard in the post, because that's really difficult. If they force a switch out of the pick and roll, which happens more in the playoffs, and Mark's willing to go in there and attack the small, and they have to double, Mark's going to find Kawhi Leonard every single time. Right. And that's really difficult for teams to stop. So there's all these ways that it can work, but there are enough permutations of this where I'm like, this is going to be a little tricky for them to figure out.
Yeah, personally, I think it's going to help their movement. Like, I think having Mark as a passer is really going to help them because they just didn't have that outlet. Like Carter mentioned earlier, how you'd send two guys at Lowry, you'd force him to give up the ball and make someone else make a decision. And it was the same thing with DeRozan, and they really struggled with that. And Kawhi really hasn't been that facilitator so far this season. And I just think that with Lowry, especially with the issues he's having with their back, Gasol's almost insurance for Lowry. Like, I think that they're going to be able to run more offense through him. It's going to help give them that second playmaker. And I just think that it's funny because they just have had so little time together. Like, Kawhi and Lowry, the number of games they've played together, I think it's still in the 30s. Like, it's pretty low. And I think having another high IQ player out there is going to help them when things are falling apart, because at the end of games, things are really going to isolation. And when you can have Gasol as that outlet with Lowry in the pick and roll, pick and pop, or dribble handoffs, or however you want to use them, I think that just helps them find whoever is open, and it helps them kind of make smart decisions on the court, because I think they've struggled with that in late game situations.
Yeah, I think the basketball knowledge is big. I think the aggressiveness is going to be what's going to be interesting to kind of like factor.
Right, because he's in a better situation now, right? So his effort and who he's been might be a little bit different.
Well, no.
you don't think so, eh?
No, I think Mark's burdened by the same problem that Nikola Jokic has, which is some guys can't make the wrong play. That's right. Actually the limit is when you're really good and you have a mismatch and your team needs a bucket, you have to be able to sense when you're like, I gotta go do this. This is like, I have to, like, Damian Lillard had, like, came out of the womb that way, you know? Mm-hmm. I think Kyrie Irving has that. I don't think it's dependent upon what his team needs. He's just always ready to do that.
Right.
And so it's a little bit different. Mark, I think this is the thing in Memphis, is there were games when it was like, Zebo can't get in versus this matchup. Mike's hurt and can't get loose. They don't have another weapon. We need you to score 35 points tonight. And Mark would be like, but he was open, so I passed it. And it was like, when I covered him in the 2013 Western Conference Finals, I talked to him a lot about that. I was like, is there a point at which you just have to try and get? He's like, no. He's like, you have to make the right play. You have to trust that you can play the right way.
Right.
And like, I just don't think that's true. I think that's one of the amazing things about LeBron, is that he's managed to meld the two concepts of, he knows, like, he will make the right play 9 out of 10 times. And the 10th time that he doesn't make the right play, it's because the game needs him to not make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the more interesting subtext of the second LeBron era, was the extent to how comfortable I was in the fourth quarter when he had the ball. Yeah. In tight spots. It was like, I just knew that he was going to, like, what I can't tell you how many times in the first LeBron era he would do something and he'd make the right play at the wrong time, or the fuck it, I'm taking over play at the wrong time. It's like, you know, you just couldn't quite figure, he didn't quite have the rhythm of it down, and he did figure it out. And it was really a joy to watch. I do think with Gasol, what's interesting to me is less about his aggressiveness and just more how involved he's going to be. I'm a little worried. Anytime these guys come in midseason, I always get a little worried, especially interesting cases like Gasol, who kind of plays a certain way when he's heavily involved in an offense. And as you said, it doesn't really match the Raptors' style. I'm a little concerned they're just going to stash him in corners and run pick and pop.
Yeah.
It does feel like that might happen.
Well, there's also like, look, I've always had a really pleasant time talking to Marc Gasol. He's an extremely intelligent player. I've talked to him just a handful of times, but kind of a grump. That's just kind of the deal. It's like, he's moody and he can be kind of grumpy sometimes.
So can Justin.
And
hey, never.
And Kyle Lowry is kind of a grump. And Kawhi Leonard is not pleasant. Like, not a pleasant person.
Yeah, that's a pretty grumpy locker room now that I think about it.
Thing is, like, I think they can be fine, right? Because it's like, I think they have some young guys in there that probably bring some joy. But I also think that, like, you know, you're right that I think that there's a possibility that Mark could just feel very isolated and separated. And, because they have – part of it is also, like, if you look at the team concept, like, Kyle's going to have to do what Kyle does because Kyle's the engine. He's been there the longest, and he's trusted, and there's continuity. And Kawhi has to do everything that Kawhi wants to do because you basically have to enable him as much as possible because you're trying to keep him long-term. So, like,
right.
If one of those three guys is going to get removed from the equation, it's going to be Gasol. Now, at the same time, though, Leonard and Lowry have played against Mark for so long. They know how smart he is. And those D'Antoni told me this, and it really – when I asked him, I was like, how are you so confident that Chris Paul and James Harden are going to work? And he was like, great players recognize one another and they want to play together. They know how to get one another involved because they know what it takes to be at that level. And that insight to me was really interesting, to not think of it in terms of players coming from, I'm good and I need things my way. But if you're good enough to earn their respect to that level, it inherently changes things. Getting back to LeBron, that strikes me a lot too, is like, he used to be very, like, in that first Cavs run, he was very egalitarian, where if you were open, he trusted you and he loved you. And as time went on, it became, if you do not shoot when I get you the ball and you don't make it, you're never getting it again.
Right.
What's the Wendy thing? Selectively unselfish?
Yeah. So it's like, it's very much like, you better make the best of it because
otherwise you turn into Jay Crowder.
Yeah. Because
trust is fleeting.
And because, like, every possession – and I understand it because I think from LeBron's perspective, it's like every possession that I have is precious because I know how good I am.
Yeah. I gave you this.
Yeah, exactly.
And you squandered it?
Yeah. I think that's the same thing with – actually, I think it's going to be the same thing with all three of those guys, where it's like they better have that built-in respect for one another as all-stars and great players, because otherwise it's going to get real awkward.
Yeah. Who they fill out the roster with on the bio market too, because they currently have 9 players on their team, and you kind of need more than that. What's your impression of Nick Nurse and the job he's doing? Because I get the feeling that if the Raptors knew this was the team they'd be going into the playoffs with this year, they might have kept Dwayne Casey at least for this year. I do think that potentially moving on from Casey was the right deal, but I just never was huge on bringing in Nurse and promoting the architect of their offense that's been so solid in the playoffs.
I think it's been mixed. I think that there are mixed results from it, which is funny because the surface level is like they have the second best record in the Eastern Conference. They're the number 2 seed. They were killer for half of the year. They looked incredible. Like, all of these things look like it was just like what would you possibly have to concern yourself with? They're 6th in net rating, which is kind of the first tick. And then the second thing is, this is one of the things I get from Twitter for all of the nonsense I find myself in day after day. I get a really good sense for a team sometimes, because when I notice that Raptors fans are complaining about when this team is this good, there's a temptation to be like, why are you bitching? They're great. But then I go, wait, what are you complaining about? And so you go in and you find out what they're complaining about, and you're like, oh, that actually is kind of an issue. I think the best thing that he's done is he's just more open than Casey. Right. Casey was very much like an old school coach, and those coaches tend to be like, we're going to play my way, and we're going to do it this way, and we're going to do this, and these are our principles, and that's what we're going to do. And more I find that the best coaches, like Michael Malone, has evolved from that into kind of something more like what Nurse has done, which is you've got to be flexible. Like, you have got to respond to what your team needs at the time. And his willingness to do things like, we're not going to have a starting center. If we need Serge Ibaka, we're going to start Serge Ibaka. If we need Jonas Valanciunas, we're going to start Jonas Valanciunas. That's
right.
The complication of this deal, by the way, is they can't do that anymore. He's trying to benchmark Gasol. It's not going to go well. but like those kind of little changes, I think are really valuable. I covered Nurse when he was in the G League. And he was like, it was apparent then. Like, there's a bunch of guys now, like Chris Finch is probably going to be a coach in the next couple of years. P.S. the Cavaliers should hire him. He was a G League coach at the time. Nurse was a guy that like everyone knew, like, this guy's going to be a really good head coach. And so I think that there's like, I think he's done some really good things. He's built relationships, which I think matters. Like, I think there's all these ways that things have gone well, but there, I think there are also concerns. And one of the things I think that we're noticing more and more is, if you're in a big game and it's tight and it's late in the game, is he going to be able to make all of the right moves? Is he going to overthink things? Because that's the problem when you open up, when you are a coach that adapts to the situation. That's the flip side of it, is you wind up doing things like, I'm going to overthink it and try and get too inventive, and then I cost my team opportunities. So yeah, I think there's been good stuff that he's done. I think there's been some concerns. I think this Raptors team probably isn't quite as good as their record. I think they're still very good. And we're going to have to see what they look like in the playoffs, because I, you know, even with all the changes, I still got to see it.
That's fair. To that end, has the last couple days, this kind of flurry of trades, especially at the top of the East, have they changed your opinion on how the East is going to play out? And what is that opinion right now?
I'm less confident in assertions. So I was thinking about it the other day about, what do I think the percentage chances are that each team goes out in a certain round? And with Philadelphia, I entered and I was like, well, I think there's probably like a 20% chance they get knocked off in the first round in a 4-5 matchup. There's like a 50% chance that they get knocked out in the second round, and only like a 30% chance that they make they either lose in the conference finals or finals.
Right.
And that was optimistic. And now I think it's a lot more even. I think it's a lot more staggered towards the back half. Like, what Philadelphia did, much like Milwaukee, is they took the things that I was like, look, you can do all you want. You can beat all these teams. Congratulations. But I know who you are, and you're not going to be able to beat these counters that you're going to find in the playoffs. I got no confidence in your ability to get past Boston. You're not going to be able to score enough points. And then they added Tobias Harris, and I'm like, you might be able to score enough points. That might be like, Tobias Harris inherently changes the dynamics, because if Baines and Horford neutralize Embiid last year, they couldn't do anything. Sixers couldn't do anything. They were helpless. They were a turtle on its back when Embiid was neutralized by Baines and Horford. Now with Harris, it's like, no, we're going to run two-man game with Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris. We're going to put Simmons in the dunker spot. What, shoot a three, you coward? We'll have Tobias Harris take all his threes. How about that? Like, right. That shifts what they're capable of doing. Like, I think the Simmons addition was really good.
Their bench is fascinating to me, because it's completely different. And I'm not sure it's any better, but it's definitely different.
Yeah, it's definitely different. It's not the same weird thing that it was before. It's a different weird thing. I think I have been asking this question, and you're seeing this on Twitter a lot. Pelton tweeted something about this. I think Michael Lee tweeted something about this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us are kind of reaching the same conclusion, which is like, look, are we just overthinking this thing with the Bucks? Like, are we just – we've all been like, well, yeah, but they got to get the matchups. And yeah, but – and then now we're like, look, man, it's February 7th. And they've got the best record in the league. They've got the best net rating in the league by a significant margin over the Warriors. They've got an MVP candidate, a guy that if Harden tails off at all is going to win MVP. They've got shooters everywhere. They added another one. They've got great coaching, who I know that he got worked by LeBron. And I think I still have that concern that he won't adjust the way he never adjusted to LeBron. But there is that part of us that are always like, we want to give guys breaks, because we're like, what if you just can't figure out a way to beat LeBron? Because you can't beat LeBron, you know? Like, what if you just?
I'm still worried about it, and it's all Bud based, and it's Bud based and second superstar based. They're the only one star contender in the league, right?
I think
Chris Middleton's pretty damn good. Like,
I think that's unfair to Chris Middleton. Look, Chris Middleton has been like
just a fringe all star in the East. Makes me like.
But that's what Kyle Lowry
is. Ben Golliver would call a triple A secondary star.
Well, I guess here's a question, because I always think about this. I've been focusing on this a lot this year with, if players that have high esteem were in different situations, where would they look? And so, like, my favorite is to be like, if Lonzo and Ingram played in Charlotte, what do we think of them? That's my favorite team to play.
Not great, Bob.
Yeah. Not great. But by the same token, if Chris Middleton had played with LeBron James in Cleveland, how would we think of him? Because he would have hit so many threes. Would have hit absolutely unfair number of three-pointers.
I mean, I like Chris Middleton as much as the next guy. I just don't know what his, like, you know, like, I don't know what Chris Middleton going nuclear looks like. And sometimes you need your second star to go nuclear.
Look at the first round last year.
Yeah, go back and watch
that. He was good. You're right.
That was the thing, is like, Boston you know, Boston was out talented badly in that series. And as much as like I've been on the look, let's slow down with Brad Stevens until he actually does it. Mm-hmm. Wagner. But I was really impressed with that series. His bar was very low considering what he was up against. I feel bad every time I say that because Joe Prunty's a really nice guy, but like he was just outclassed. But part of it was like the Celtics knew we can scheme out Giannis and they got nothing. They got nothing. And then Chris Middleton was like, no, like I'm gonna kill you. You're gonna leave me in single coverage and I'm gonna murder you. And he did that, and that's how they got him to seven games. Like that series was fascinating because it was like, God, with Boston's talent, they should not win this series. And then on the other hand, it was like, God, with Milwaukee's coaching, they shouldn't even be in this series. And so I went seven games. But, like, I think Middleton is not – even if Middleton's not a star, part of it is also is like, I don't buy into the multiple superstar thing. I just don't. I don't buy into it at all. Like, the Warriors, sure. But part of it is, like, the Warriors are have a system that maximizes all of their superstars' abilities.
They're a perfect fit. It's exhausting.
And when they turn back into – and when – versus Houston – when KD decides, well, they're going to ISO me, I'm going to shoot 57,000 ISO jumpers from mid-range. When they turn back into a your turn, my turn team, like most superstar teams are, they almost got beat. So
right.
I look at it and like, I would, if the Warriors play like the Warriors, they're going to kill everyone. If the Bucks play like the Bucks, I wonder if, and that's the question, like, can the Bucks play like the Bucks in the playoffs? Because part of it is, the idea of a single superstar being stoppable is dependent upon you having the personnel to stop him. Giannis gives me pause because Giannis, there's no physical matchup for him.
No.
Right.
There's not centers, not wings, not guards. There's nothing you can put on him. You can't switch on him. You can't. And if you send help, he is a good enough passer and they have the shooters, they will kill you over and over again. So
that's the kind of nice thing about that roster construction, because I don't think anyone thinks Giannis is like an A-plus passer, but all these shooters make it so fucking easy for him.
Yeah.
To like, he hits the easiest passing lanes.
When I went to Milwaukee in preseason, it was great. I really liked it for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons was talking to the players, you got this vibe of like, and staff and everybody, like you got this vibe of like, they knew how good they were going to be. Like they walked into camp the first day and were like, oh, we're going to roll teams. We can be really good. But they were smart enough to have learned from their experiences touting themselves. Like I wrote this in preseason, they learned the lesson the Wizards never did. Which is like, I kept offering the bait of like, could you guys be the best team in the East? And they're like, we're done talking about it. We got to go do it. It doesn't matter what we say. Every year we come in, we talk about it. We're done. We're just going to go do it. And they did it. And so like, that to me is really impressive that they're not beating their chest. They're not like, we're disrespected. We need to get more respect. We're the best team in the world. We're coming for the Warriors. They're just like, we're playing good. We hope we keep playing well. That's all we're going to do. And like,
I'm surprised we're not hearing the victim mentality more is the Giannis MVP campaign.
I think it'll probably get louder. I think Bucks fans will probably get annoyed more the longer the season goes. Part of it's just like, there's two things.
Waiting on the Harden storm to pass.
Yeah, it's like if Harden slides at all, Giannis overtakes him. And two is, look, I study the MVP more than I think any other writer in the league. It's become like the thing that I focus on the most, just by happenstance. It's something I can dig into. And so for me, it's like, look, I can put together an incredibly well-rounded, cohesive, detailed, like I could do a lecture series on why Giannis Antetokounmpo is the MVP. But none of it matters. So I'm like, Harden's averaging 40 points a game. That's it. Nothing else matters. Yeah. The assist, the efficiency, doesn't matter. Harden's averaging 40 points a game. That's the end of the conversation. So if Harden keeps doing that, there's no argument against him. Now, he's not going to keep doing that, and he's going to slide backwards, and then we're going to have probably a pretty tough argument at the end of the season because a lot of people are going to be like, look what he carried them to, which is exactly what they said about Russ. And then a lot of other people are going to be like, Giannis made his team better.
Right. And I think down the stretch too, we're going to see more and more pieces kind of highlighting the Bucks and what they're doing. Cause it seems like especially with these young teams, of can they get over the hump? There's like the build up to All-Star break, and then after that, if you're still a good story, and in Milwaukee's case, they got even better adding Mirotić, I think they're going to have a strong stretch to close out the year, and I think you're going to see a lot more focus on Giannis and what they're doing. And personally, like, I'm not too concerned about the Bud thing. Like, to me, what had got them in the past was, it's funny how you mentioned how they have Brook Lopez in the corner and pulling out the centers. That's a lot of what the Cavs had done against them with Channing Frye. And Al Horford was another one of those guys, like Marcus Gasol, that's like allergic to making the wrong pass or the wrong play. And that was always what made Tristan Thompson so effective against them, is because he's going to take him off the he's going to take him off the boards. He's able to stick with him at the 3-point line. He's able to move with him, and it just kind of cut off that hub of the offense. And I just don't think that those same weaknesses are there for the Bucks. Like, I think you still see sometimes that
also the Bucks have more talent than the Hawks ever had.
Well, I don't know about Hawks teams, Carter. I don't know about that. I haven't seen their entire starting lineup get player of the month. So
that's actually a great point, Justin. That will be an embarrassment.
It was such a nice team. Like, it was a nice story. And you guys just you're like Lakers fans, but only against the Hawks. Like, that's you.
I'll never forgive the Basketball Writers of America for that Player of the Month award.
Well, here's the other thing. What I get really bitter about is when I'm wrong about things, and I picked the Hawks to win that series.
You did? A coward.
Yeah, I did. Well, part of it was Kyrie being hurt, and then at the same time, we also have to kind of acknowledge on what happened there. Like, Damari Carroll got his leg like broken in game one. Delly fired like a harpoon at Korver's leg in game one. And we took out Horford's shoulder and got him thrown out of an OT game.
Yeah. When I went in the locker room after game three, I walked in. There are locker rooms. If you do this long enough, you get a sense. Like, you get a vibe. It's hard to hide a vibe. It's it can be done. I've seen teams do it. But typically speaking, you get to know. I walked into that tiny ass locker room after game three and was like, these guys are broken. They're like, emotionally, yes, but it was more like I've seen this before. The look on their faces was like, we're just too hurt. We're just like, even if we could figure out a plan to deal with LeBron, which we can't, like, we can't do anything because we're just too hurt. Now, like, there, it always drove me crazy because with Bud, I was like, I screamed every single game. I was like, you have to make LeBron score 60. Like, that's what you have. Like, you have to stay home. You can't lose to JR. That's what you can't do.
They lost to every other member of the Cavaliers.
Yeah. Everybody.
100 times.
Because they were so committed to, like, we got to slow down LeBron. And I'm like, you make LeBron do that. Like, you make LeBron score 60 on you. Because it's exhausting. His legs are going to cramp up. And it's going to annoy him. Like, that's the best way to go about it. Now, granted, there are teams that have done that, and he just did it against them. Like, he just did it. Because Toronto switched things up after they got their asses handed to them and switched things up, and then LeBron was like, no, you open the door. You're not getting out again. You're in here. But, like, I don't know. I will say that this Bucks team, look, I love Al Horford and Paul Millsap. Those guys are – I just think they're awesome. I love the way they play the game.
Very nice players, and I'm being as condescending as I can be.
Lakers fans. But I will say that, like, Giannis is obviously just universally better than either of them ever was.
He's like three talent tiers higher than those guys, and that's actually not a slight to those guys. That's just a compliment to Giannis.
So, like, that's the thing is you know, I look in those series and I'm like, okay, so, like, what's Stevens gonna do? And it's probably gonna be he's gonna put Smart on him. And he's going to try and draw offensive fouls, and that might work, right? Like, that could work. It's just drawing offensive foul.
Oh, that's going to be infuriating. I'm mad you even said it. I'm annoyed already.
Well, I'm asking for props on it. I'm going to put lines on how many per game he's going to draw, because Giannis, that's where Giannis gets turnovers. Is the Bucks are the number one team in the league at fewest points off of turnovers allowed, and I was like, that's such an impressive stat. And I talked to the Bucks about it, and one thing that Bud mentioned, he's like, well, you know, one thing you gotta remember that is we don't have a lot of live ball turnovers, and, like, that's code for when we turn the ball over, it's because Giannis charges into somebody and they have to take it out, so our defense gets a setback. Right. Like, that's like a little, like, that's like a little note that takes this, like, really nice narrative of mine, which is like, look at those Bucks and how good their defense is, and it's like, well, actually, we fuck up as much as anybody. We just fuck up differently. So it allows us to get our defense back. But like that kind of stuff, I think, is what they'll do. And there may be counters, and there may be an injury, right? Like if Middleton gets hurt or Blake gets hurt or whoever, because like they do need everybody. If you're gonna have if you're not gonna have two superstars, you better have everybody else. And so that could be the problem. But I just look at it and I go, like, Boston's the one I look at, and they're fascinating. Like this loss tonight, there's the Lakers is another example. This isn't their year. It's just not. And maybe they can turn it around and go on a run in the playoffs, and I've seen that before. But for a regular season team, like, this is just a year when, like, nothing has gone right for them.
It's so hard for miserable teams to feel like a miserable team is going to win.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a miserable team. Yeah, they don't like each other at all.
Somehow found ways to make it happen. And, yeah. Like, even I had doubts about that. And
The misery around some of those Cavs seasons made it feel impossible. But LeBron was so singularly great that it was like, and Kyrie was so singularly great that it was like, okay, we can get through this. But I don't really see the Celtics as one of those teams. But right. But I'll say this, man. Anytime I pick against the Celtics, I'm going to have a knot in my stomach about it because it just feels like they could just figure it out at any moment.
I mean, that's the thing, right? Is like, you'll feel pretty good picking against the Sixers because it's like Jimmy Butler is an explosive personality. Simmons is schemable. I think Brett Brown's brief playoff history wasn't prolific in terms of how he handled it. Embiid is turnover prone. Like there are all these weaknesses with the Sixers that you can be like, all right, I feel good about picking against them. Milwaukee, I think you can probably talk yourself into based off of like, no, like they just haven't been there. I'll trust these other guys. But like, look at your options. Your options are the Raptors, which is a team that has always shat themselves in the playoffs, and they've changed out half of the roster, and I still have that fear. Two, like, I don't know what their chemistry is going to be like the closer they get to Kawhi's expiration date. I don't know how this Marc Gasol thing is going to work. And I don't know, like, there's a lot of warning signs with their metrics and with their overall play. Mm-hmm. The Celtics act like they hate each other. And their performances are all over the place. And Gordon Hayward is a huge liability, making the most money on the team. And quietly, Al Horford's not quite as good defensively as he was last year. Like, you can't feel good about picking any team in the East, which is surprising because they're all really great teams, but they're also teams that I think come in with a lot of baggage versus the West, where I think that it's a lot more open and like the teams aren't as good as the teams in the East. But the teams in the West, I feel like more like, at least I know what I'm getting. Like, I feel like I know what I'm getting from the top teams in the West.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's fair.
Yeah, Toronto freaks me out too because, again, the big thing is Kyle Lowry. He's going to be 33 years old. He's 5'10 and he's got a bad back and he hasn't been able to shoot this year. So that's a little bit concerning. And then there's a lot of pressure when you have a small forward that's got a foot out the door. I'm not saying that to be a dick. I think there's just a lot of noise and you have Lawrence Frank standing in the corner every single game recruiting Kawhi. Before we wrap this up, was there another move that kind of stood out to you or even non-move?
For good or bad?
Yeah, good or bad.
Just something particularly interesting.
And before you go into that, it looks like the Blazers are getting their good Rodney Hood game. So when you get
that's gonna get it out of the way early.
Yeah, get it out of the way early. Those poor bastards don't know what they're in for.
You got to be nicer to guys that don't play well on the team that you had. Like, it's situational dependent. I want good things for Rodney Hood. Let's all.
I do too. I feel really bad.
I want good things for our Blazer fan friends, and I just don't want them to get their hopes up.
Yeah, no, I feel really bad for Rodney Hood, especially when you look at how much of this is like tied to anxiety and things like that. It's just confidence has been tough for him, and I like seeing him do well. He's an easy guy to root for, but I'm also realistic on what they're going to get.
I'm fascinated by most of the deadline deals. So like the Fultz swap to Orlando, I want good things from Markel Fultz. I want him to get back on track. I hope that not being in the Sixers medical path of death will help him. If they can get Mo Bamba back on track, cause there's a lot of concerns about him right now, but if they can get Mo Bamba back on track, along with Jonathan Isaac, like there's something there. There's a little something brewing there, and I want that to work out. I hated the Avery Bradley deal for Memphis. It was just like the worst option. They traded two really good role players for
so weird, man.
Role player. It's just money. It's just Like,
such a bummer. And it, like, you know what I think the real bummer is? I know you care, but I don't care about what the Grizzlies are getting back in a deal. But it's like, are sending away in the deal. I certainly don't care what the Clippers are getting in a deal because they're not playing for the season. Would have been so fun to see Temple and Green go to a team that's trying to win.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that. Like that's the thing is like those guys could have actually helped playoff teams. And instead, you know, they both of these teams that are giving up on the season just swap parts. And I'm like, that's useless. I thought that the Lakers trading future Hall of Famer Ivica Zubac was really interesting. Their decision to move on from a legendary player in Zubac. I thought that was bold on their part.
Normally they trade for Kareem, not trade him away.
I don't know that you've seen his per 36s over the last 18 games, but I'm told that they're absolutely incredible.
I'm so mad that I was busy. I got slammed at work today and missed the last couple hours of the deadline on social media, and I am so sad that I missed Lakers Twitter reacting to that trade. That broke my fucking heart.
I had so many people in my mentions over the last week telling me, like, you're underrating Zubac as part of this deal. He's the one that can really put the Pelicans over the – like, I had so much nonsense. I liked – what else did I like? You know what? I really liked Houston. So I gave Houston – I tried to explain it to Rockets fans. I was like, look, you're still going to be good, but you're not going to be as good because you swapped out a lot of pieces and that combination was really particularly great. And I don't like your upgrades. Like, James Ennis and Carmelo are not it. Like, James Ennis, Carmelo Anthony, and MCW, like, this ain't it, Chief. But then we get Shumpert. That's really good. Like, Shumpert consistently with those Cavs teams, there were always really good metrics, which is why I was always frustrated that LeBron just didn't like him enough. Because I was like, he can really help you. Like, Iman Shumpert wouldn't have forgotten the score. That wouldn't have happened. I just want to put that out there.
This always goes back to JR, doesn't it?
Iman Shumpert would have forgotten the score. He wouldn't have. He would have.
That's true.
He would have had the knowledge. He would have made the right play. But
yeah, legendary cerebral player, Iman Shumpert. What are we doing here? I know it's late, Matt, but come on.
But I think I liked what they did with, you know, they got off of Brandon. I mean, part of it's they made moves to get under the luxury tax because their owner is not as willing to spend as a previous owner, and that's a long-term concern. But I think they get in Shumpert, that's the wing that they needed. So they've got Fareed as a backup to Capella when Capella gets back, and like Houston is going to make the playoffs. They're going to be dangerous and they're going to have a chance to make a run, and Shumpert is going to be a guy that can help them get there. He's going to do a lot more for them, I think, than what James Ennis did. I like the Mavericks clearing the decks for Luka. Like, that's essentially what they did is they had a whole plan. Luka, they managed to pull off getting Luka. They saw how good Luka was and was like, well, we got to get rid of all these veteran guys. These guys are not good. They don't fit around Luka. So they're gone. We're just starting over. I think that's really good to make a decision on the fly. The Porter Bulls deal was really weird. It just continues to be very weird to me. It's weird that the Wizards traded Porter and Morris but kept Bradley Beal. That's odd. I liked I loved what the Cavs did this week. Just, you know, take on the money, get the picks, get as many assets as possible. With the second rounders we talked about, and we talked about how they're kind of overrated, the best value I think for them is the ability, if there's a team that's like, we don't have any capacity to bring on a rookie drafted at 26 or 28 and get him minutes. We don't have the capacity. The Cavs can then go, well, we'll give you 3 seconds or 2 seconds for your 26.
That's a great point. Right.
And that way you can get more guys on your summer league team and in your two-way contracts for your long-term potential without having it next year.
And that's what the Cavs had done with the Tyus Jones pick. They traded back and they got a couple seconds, which one they used for, I think, in the Fry trade. And then the other one was to draft Jetty. So yeah, I that would be really great to see the Cavs do that.
Right. Especially I think in this draft, you're going to have that opportunity because this draft is so shallow and so awful that like you're going to have a lot of value to get in that back 10 of guys that if you want to take a flyer on somebody, I think you can move up and be able to get into that range. And that's going to be the really good capacity, I think, is, you know, and especially if you can package one of the veterans, right? Like if somebody's like, yeah, we'll give you a 26 because we need a center and we'll take Tristan. Heck yeah. Let's go.
That makes me sad.
Don't Matt, your capacity to accidentally hurt our feelings is something I really have come to enjoy.
Well, I have a lot of experience, so.
This is true.
Don't pretend like it's not on purpose most of the time. Don't you dare.
Well, here's the thing, though. I liked a lot of those Cavs teams. I appreciated, even though they were a mess, I liked a lot of their guys. I think a lot of it was just a matter of JR. That was just like a big...
You just hate JR forever.
Get past J.R. Smith. But even then, though, like, here's the thing, though, is you can't say, like, I hate J.R. because it's like, you read about him and his daughter, you know, like, that whole experience.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, that's that changes the way that you look at a guy. Like, he's just a different player than he was early in his career when I was like, you coach killing schmuck. Like, he grew and he developed. He became a lot more mature. If he learned to tell time, things would have been a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
chill, bro.
Chill. All right, Matt. Well, I can't tell time, and I can see that it's probably time to wrap this up. We really do appreciate you coming on. Really, really good insight, and I'm fascinated. I think this trade deadline has really set up an interesting end stretch here for the Eastern Conference, and I think the West, outside of whatever matchup the Warriors are in, it was going to be interesting to begin with. So I think we're going to get some good playoffs. So thank you so much for coming on. I want to thank our listeners as well. Remember, the best way to support the podcast is by subscribing, leave a rating, leave a review, tell your friends and family about it. Word of mouth is the best way to spread it. So thanks again to Matt. Thanks to Carter for staying up. I'll get the editing this week, and till next time, go Cavs.